Hey, it's Cameo, and welcome. Just like you, I wear many hats, and sometimes I feel overwhelmed by the demands of everyday life. And there was a time when I felt lost, stuck, and unsure of how or where to start the transformation that I needed. And that's why we're here, to share experiences, lessons, tools, and tips for shaking up your life and living for you. I'm glad you're here, so let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Cameo Show. Today we have with us Greg Braun, my husband and co-host. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how we doing?
And as our special guest, we have our friend, Mr. Dave Prater. Dave is a husband, he's a father, and he is the vice president of Supercross. He's here to share with us today his journey from grad school to where he is now and how he balances his work and home life. Dave, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks, Cameo. Thanks for having me. Excited
Absolutely.
To be here.
Yeah, we're so pumped to have you. Normally, we would be sitting around a table, probably smashing some sushi, but today we have the privilege of having you on the show. And before we get into all of the details that we want to discuss, Greg, you've got to slam us with a dad joke. I know you have one, right?
Yes, this is a good one. What did one knife say to the other knife?
No idea.
Man, you're looking sharp.
Ooh, good one. Good one.
That is a great one.
You have to bookmark that one, Dave. Pull it out.
That is a great one, and it ties in perfectly to something I think, well, an aside, something we'll discuss today. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Dave, you are no stranger to podcasts. You are a really big deal and you never talk about it. So I'm so pumped to have you here. Your story is something that I think is so inspiring, especially to, you know, maybe younger listeners and some of the Supercross audience who love this sport so much and aspire to be a part of this world and maybe aren't sure they can. You know, we've all been in that spot where we're like, I have these big goals and these big dreams, but I don't know where to start. And so the story that you've shared with us kind of behind the scenes is just so phenomenal. A story of tenacity, a story of really just going for something that maybe seemed far-fetched. And so I would like to start there, if you don't mind, and kind of start with how you decided that this was the type of career choice that you wanted to pursue and how and when you knew that.
I mean, I guess we could start with, you know, like you said, grad school. So I went to Florida State. I was in my second year of grad school, sport administration, and really just didn't know what I was going to do. Everyone, it seemed like undergrad was one thing because no one had started their careers. Everyone was still obviously came from high school. Most people came from high school, didn't have any career experience. But then you get to grad school, and at least in my field, the majority of the folks that I was in class with had experience. They had real world professional experience. And I'm sitting in class listening to these folks, and they're giving these real world examples. And there was nothing really that was I could relate to. I mean, I theoretically knew what was going on. I knew, you know, that they had entered the business world already, but I didn't have any experience. So, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I grew up a huge football fan, basketball, baseball, huge motocross fan, raced amateur stuff, just, and I'm talking low level amateur stuff when I was a kid, but just really was struggling with what am I going to do when I get out? I don't want to work, you know, in a box office, no offense to the box office folks in the world. It's a wonderful position, but it just wasn't something that I, you know, wanted to do. So I was struggling with it. I was struggling with what am I going to do? Should I continue with grad school? Should I try to go out in the real world and get a job and get some experience and then go back to grad school? And at the time, had a really good friend who was playing baseball for Florida State, and I was talking to him about it, and he just asked me this question. He's like, "What would you do if it didn't matter? Mm-hmm. But if it didn't matter, if you weren't thinking about money, how much money you could make, or what the, you know, or how prestigious it was, what would you do?" And I started thinking about it, and I'd always loved motocross and supercross from the time I was a little boy. So I told him that. I said, probably work in professional supercross or motocross. And thought about it for a little while. Didn't really, you know, pursue it at that time, but I did end up leaving grad school. I don't necessarily like to look at it as a regret, but I never finished that degree. But started looking for a job, started managing a Bally Total Fitness, because I was always into fitness and lifting weights as well. But managing a gym, as I quickly found out, isn't really about fitness, or at least this gym wasn't. It was about selling memberships, and it wasn't something that I really wanted to do. So I started writing letters. I've talked to Greg about this quite a bit, but started writing letters to, at the time, the company was Pace Motorsports that produced and promoted Supercross, and wasn't getting any response at all. And one night, I think in just a fit of frustration, wrote a letter that I still don't know what I really said, but evidently it was pretty strongly worded, because after I got the job, months later, my then boss told me, I don't remember exactly the conversation, but it was something to the effect of, I knew I had to at least give you an interview to have the kind of balls you had to write me that kind of letter. So that's a long way, a long-winded way of going about it. But it really was just the realization that I wasn't going to just let my life happen to me. I was going to get out in front of it. And if nothing else, at least try to dictate where it went. And even if it didn't end up in supercross or motocross or wherever I wanted to be, I knew I'd have, you know, a heck of a story to tell if I gave it my all and tried to get there. So
I love that, because there's so much that goes into that. First, feeling that kind of very familiar, very common feeling of, what the hell am I going to do with my life? Right. We go through being told when to be, where to be, how to be, what to know. And then all of a sudden, one day you're supposed to just say, okay, well, now I'm an adult and I know exactly what I want to do with myself. And we all look around and go, well, I don't. Does anybody really? You know, and you feel stressed out and a lot of pressure. So you experienced that and said, okay, had that friend that asked you that question, which is such a great question. What would you do if none of it mattered and it was just for you? And you like dug deep and really answered it and then went for it. And I feel like there are so many people who maybe don't, you know, out of fear, out of pressure, out of stress, out of survival. And you were in a spot where you could say, like you said, I want to get out in front of it and I want to try to dictate the direction of my life. And based on the way I answered that question, that's the way I should start pointing myself, you know?
Yeah.
Now this letter, so we're talking about like, gosh, we're going to be old here for a minute, but like 20 plus years ago,
23 years ago.
23 years ago, when there weren't like emails and online, it wasn't common. So it was like fax machines and writing letters and maybe finding job openings online, maybe, you know.
Yes, I was FedExing the letters. So it was like a big deal. Someone had told me use FedEx because that'll get people's attention. So I had FedExed, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 letters to this guy. And he ended up being a great guy.
All to the same guy,
guy named Brian Scher now, who I haven't spoken to in years, but an awesome guy. But yeah, there was no response. So evidently, like I said, it must have been an out-of-body experience. I don't remember writing a letter that was pointed, or at least as pointed as he had said, but hey, whatever it was, it worked. So
well, it came from real authentic passion. And definitely, like you said, a little bit of frustration, you were fired up. So you didn't hold back. Well, it worked in your favor.
So knowing Dave, I mean, I didn't know the FedEx part of that story, but that only adds another element of awesome to it. But just knowing Dave, you silently put in the work all through school. You had your head down, you grinded through it. You worked when everyone else was playing and partying, and you were, I don't even have to ask, I know you did, you know, and you put the work in, and that little bits of work every day, week after week, month after month, builds up this confidence of like, damn it, I deserve this shot. So I feel you, brother, on that. It reminds me of a story for myself when I worked at Chase. I don't know if you remember this, Cameo, but we had these really good refinance offers and people would just ignore my emails, my calls. So I said, screw it, I'm going to send them FedEx letters. And we would like send these FedEx. So people would open them. They're not junk mail if it comes FedEx, you know, and they took it serious. But I was convicted. I knew like, just call me and I can save you $300 a month, but you just keep ignoring my call, you know?
Just answer my letter. I'm the guy.
I'm the guy.
I think that's probably what it said is like, hey, I've been sending you these letters. I just need a shot. Answer them. Letter, let's go.
Yeah, right. Like, wouldn't you love to have your hands on that letter?
I'd love to. Actually, I got to call. I'm going to see if I can get in touch with Brian and say, by any chance, do you still have that letter? I doubt it, but if he does, it'd be epic. Yeah.
That would be phenomenal.
Frame it.
Hey, real quick, back to tie this into your dad joke. So, my roommate who asked me that question, and it's funny because I think about it all the time now that I'm a dad and use the word sharp. He used to make fun of that, and it was like a thing between us because his dad, that was his favorite word. If you're sharp, you're looking sharp. And it's funny that you open with a dad joke that ties directly into my friend that asked me that question. So
yeah.
Aw, that's a little serendipitous. Dad joke. That's looking right. Sharp, looking sharp.
Sharp. I use it all the time now, and every time I'm like, Justin would laugh.
So
I love it.
You got the job. And what was your first role?
I got the job. It's funny. So I was actually with my roommate who was leaving school, and he had a full-size golden retriever. And Brian calls me out of the blue for the job to set up the interview. And I'm in the back of Justin's Blazer with this full-size golden retriever. And like the dogs all over me. I'm trying to act professional on the phone. Thankfully, got the interview. But at the time, there was no opening at Supercross. Our company does Monster Jam as well, Monster Trucks. And he told me that, hey, the interview would be for Monster Jam. And I just said, well, that's fine. Just know that when a position opens at Supercross, that's where I want to be. So did the interview and got the position in Monster Jam, and about a year and 2 months later, position opened to Supercross, and that's what I took it. The first job I had in Supercross was the event manager. So I would go in and just run the actual event in the stadium, set up everything, make sure the dirt was coordinated and all of that. And then that grew into the director of Supercross, which is kind of the liaison between our sanctioning body, which is the AMA, which is the officials of the event, all the race teams, sponsors, still live event. And then over the years, it just transitioned and morphed into something larger. So now I just oversee the day-to-day operations of the entire sport, which is...
You just oversee them. You just oversee the day-to-day operations. No big deal. And total Dave Prater style. No big deal.
It's not a big deal. Like the role and Supercross is a big deal. I'm not a big deal.
Well, I think that... I love your candor, but I think that it takes a big deal to run such a big deal. And I have a question about when you started, like that was something that was new, right? Event management. That wasn't something that you maybe knew how to do with your schooling or what you planned to maybe pursue. So what did that feel like? You were kind of like, you were the new guy running this. How did you learn? What was your approach?
I was the new guy. I just threw myself into it. I tried to do everything I could. So I tried to get on the ground with everyone that was doing every job and learn it as best I could and come in with a humble approach because these guys have been doing it for a while. There were guys that have been, you know, like I said, I was an amateur racer, but I'm talking local amateur, bottom of the barrel. And there were guys in there that had been in professional Supercross and motocross for 20 plus years. And I'm coming in as their quote boss. So had to come in and learn everything. And like I said, come in with the attitude of, hey, you guys know much more than I do. I'm just here to try to help and make it better. And so did every job that I could, learned as much as I could about every job, and just went from there.
And so now, as the vice president of Supercross, you just oversee the day-to-day operations, but what does that look like? What does your job require of you on a regular basis?
It's interesting. I mean, it's such a hard question to answer because it's so broad. Like, and that's one of the things I love about it is it's never the same. Like, I come in and one day is never like yesterday. You know, today is nothing like yesterday. Yesterday I was working with our sanctioning body and working on timing and scoring graphics and how we're going to integrate those into a new property. So not to get too detailed, but we partnered with Outdoor Motocross. So Supercross was its own standalone championship and Pro Motocross was another standalone championship. Supercross starts in January, runs through May. Motocross starts in May, runs through August. Well, this past year, 2023, we have united the two sports and created the Super Motocross World Championship. And we're taking combined points from all 28 races. Supercross is 17, Motocross is 11. And then we'll take those combined points and seed everyone into a playoff and then ultimately a Super Bowl race in the LA Coliseum in September. So there's been a lot of trying to unify the two organizations and the two sports, because while they're very similar, the two organizations aren't necessarily similar. The cultures are different, different people, obviously, different events, different tracks, different formats. So that's really been what's taken up my time for the past year or so, is just trying to unify and work together. And it's been super exciting and super rewarding because it's something new after 23 years. It's easy. I'd say I started in 2000. So year 23 is nothing like year 1 through 22. Which has been new and kind of like a little refresher for me and for my career. So, but that's really so broad. It's so hard to answer. I'm doing something different every day, but really just trying to unify both organizations, along with, we've got 7 OEMs. So original equipment manufacturers, Yamaha, Honda, Suzuki, KTM, all of those. We've got 2 new OEMs, Triumph Motorcycles and Beta Motorcycles, are joining next year. So we'll have 9 OEMs that participate, 9 race teams. So just a lot of growth and a lot of excitement for the future.
And these are all things that fall into that day-to-day operation that you are in charge of. I mean, those are heavy, heavy conversations to be having with a lot of big people and big egos and big companies and lots of money. And so how do you process that? Your approach is, it's no big deal. And that's just who you are. Like, you're just so laid back and so cool, calm, and collected. But like, are there ever times when it feels so big and so heavy that you're just kind of like, okay, holy shit, how did I get here? What am I going to do? Like, how do you work through the emotional regulation of the heaviness of your job and your role?
I don't know. I think, you know, I'm lucky that I have such a great team. Like, I really do have a strong team around me. And they take a lot of that load. So even when you get overwhelmed a bit, you've got people to rely on. I don't know who told me this, but someone told me a long time ago, you can't do hard things alone. And that's very true. Like, you need a team. So I think that's it. I lean on them. They lean on me. And we're like-minded people that, you know, believe in the details, and the details matter. And so I really don't, it doesn't get to me emotionally as much as I think it probably could, just because that load is spread out amongst the team members.
Would you say that over the years you've just kind of learned and accepted what the role requires of you and been able to separate it from you personally instead of internalizing some of the things that maybe are going on as a reflection of you or your leadership skills, being able to step back and say, well, that really isn't me. Like, this is just how this is working out, or
Yeah, I think it's hard. I think I liken it to compound interest and finances. Like you, your experience and your skill compound over time. And I just told my kids this the other day. It's like, don't ever fall under the illusion that the next level is going to be easier. Because, you know, when I first started my career, I was looking at guys that were maybe in my position now thinking, wow, those guys are coasting. Well, yeah. Little did I know that they were busting their butts, and it never gets easier. I mean, if there's one thing I could tell, and I do tell the young people that start with us, is listen, it's never going to get easier. You're going to get better and you're going to continue to get better, but don't think that one day it's just going to be like, yeah, I'm here and I can put my feet up and coast the rest of the way, because I can guarantee you, as you level up, the game gets harder and harder. But I think you get better. And I think I'm not going to lie to you. When I first started this and I had the responsibility of the event, it was heavy at times. Like I was young and I didn't know what I was doing, and the pressure got to me. But I think through those experiences of letting the pressure get to you, you realize that you can do it. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it. It's not worth, you know, being miserable because the pressure is too much. So not that it doesn't, you know, not that I don't feel that pressure now, but I can just reframe it and try to enjoy it, because not to get cliche or cheesy, but that saying pressure is a privilege, it's true.
Yeah.
If you don't have pressure, what are you really doing? I could go and I could work in a field that I didn't care as much about. I say I could do it. I'm not sure I could, but I guarantee you, if I did, I wouldn't feel the pressure and I wouldn't be as engaged and as intense as I am with something that, you know, I grew up loving and being so passionate about.
Yeah. Spoken like a true leader, because that kind of circles back to this story of tenacity and really going after what you want. And we talk about that a lot with some of the guests that we have. And it all starts with like really honing in on what's important to you and what's fulfilling above mm-hmm. all. So you could easy go get a job, not really care about it, no pressure, go home, not think about it. But this is it. Like we get one life. What's the point in waking up every day to just go, you know, do something that you're not set on fire by? It's like, who wants to live that way? And so that's why I think it's so amazing that you're here sharing the story, because it's so inspiring. It's just another testament to shooting your shot and saying, I don't really want to accept less than. Like, this is my life and I want to make sure that I'm pursuing what I really love and what I really want to wake up and do every day. And that's such a great example to set for the people that work with you, for you, for your boys who may or may not express that they see that, but they do. And they show up every day because of the way dad shows up, and your wife, and she does an amazing job of that too. Stacy is a friend of ours, obviously too. Stacy's one of, if not the first person that I met when we lived in the same neighborhood, when we all first kind of moved to Florida. And like, just over the years, as we've gotten to know you on a deeper level, it's just, it shows, it shines through in the people that you are. And so thank you for sharing that behind the scenes of Dave Prater and this progression of your role, because I think, like you said, it's easy to look at people who are kind of already doing it or already there and think, well, once I get there, I'll be happy. Once I get there, I can coast. But it isn't. It's just something that you continuously put yourself up against every day, showing up to be better every moment as an opportunity. And that pressure is a privilege. I would just like to say that pressure is a privilege also applies to getting into an ice cold plunge next time you're invited. Pressure is a privilege.
That is, you're right. You're right.
Well, we talk about that though, and it's popped into my head. And as a side note here, we've asked Dave and his wife, Stacy, to do some sauna cold plunging. And, you know, there's a little hesitance and resistance just because it's ice water and everybody's hesitant at first. But we've talked about, like, that's why we do it. Like, that's the big thrill for me, is like doing something like that puts you in a position where you have to be uncomfortable. And that translates to being the event manager out of nowhere. Like, I want this, just tell me where to be. I'll show up and be the best I can every single day and do whatever it takes. It puts you in an uncomfortable position that then makes you better. It makes you stronger. It makes you more resilient. And that's kind of the story.
Yeah.
as it compares to ice baths and your role as the vice president of Supercross, but just this mentality, I guess, is where I'm going with that. This mindset.
I think mindset is huge in this story that we're going through here. Dave's story, like when you said the younger guys that look up and like, someday I'm going to be there and that looks so easy and you think you're just coasting. But knowing Dave and knowing, you know, the kind of guy he's always looking to push himself. And I can see that in him. For example, he's the guy who does like get up early to meditate. And again, he would never talk about that. He never advertised about it, but like, that's a thing. And he's very aware of his nutrition and being active. And he's always being very positive and supportive to me as his friend. And I'm sure to many others. And like, he's always filling his mind with positive stoic wisdom and just different things that will make him better. So it's like the 23-year progression here. It's not like, you know, this is all just falling into your lap on accident. You weren't the guy looking for shortcuts 20 years ago, looking for easy, looking for, you know, I'm just going to code. You've always pushed and always said, what else can I do? And how else can I help? You know, you've always had that warrior mentality that the last, you know, 8-9 years that I've known you, like, I see that. And then you'll send me a DM of something. I'm like, yes, it starts there, man. It's like, it's all the world that you're creating for yourself inside of yourself. And then you're just able to color the world around you with all of that, you know, beautiful, powerful message and guidance. And so it's not all just an accident. This is all a lot of focused work. I see.
Silent grinding.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes. Yeah.
No, I appreciate that, Craig. I think it goes back to, you guys are getting me deep, but I think, so growing up, Kimio, you spoke to it. Like I got asked as a kid, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be? And I didn't know. Like, I want to be a football player. I want to be a motocross racer. I want to be an astronaut. You don't know. But when I look back, and I've recently just started really thinking about this and analyzing it, but it's really finding your identity and people asking, like, what do you want to be? Doesn't necessarily mean I want to be an astronaut, but what do you want to be? What do you want to make out of yourself as a human being? And I think that you have to start with identity and whatever that is. And you let identity drive your actions. Mm-hmm. And I had this talk with my kids the other day, whether it sunk in or not, I don't know, but I'll continue to have it, as opposed to a lot of people let their feelings drive their actions. So I don't feel like getting up today. I don't feel like working out. I don't feel like going to football practice, Dad. Well, if you identify as a football player and you want to be an NFL athlete one day, then you're going to have to let that drive your actions. Because if you let the fact that you're tired drive your actions, I can tell you your identity is not going to be an NFL athlete one day. So again, not to get too deep, but I've been thinking about it a lot, and what you said brought that up, Greg. But it's just everyone out there who's struggling for, you know, what next step to take in life. If you can identify who you want to become as a person, as a human being, as a profession, and believe me, you're probably not, if you're like me, you're not going to know right off the bat. It's going to be baby steps. But, you know, I built that identity, at least in my mind. I still have that. That's my driving force, is who I want to be. And it's, man, can't believe I'm admitting this, but as I get older, my identity is changing a bit, and I want to become a mentor to others and teach others this stuff, the Supercross profession that I've lived for so long, and teach them, you know, what I've learned on the journey. So I just see all these kids. I say kids, see that, I mean, that I am old, but I see all these younger people that, hate to say it, but they're settling for something. And someone told me a long time ago, you deserve what you settle for. So don't settle. And I want to try to help those folks know that you can go for it. Like, I've been blessed to, you know, meet a lot of people in some, what I would consider, you know, elite roles, like coaches of NFL teams and NASCAR executives and folks. And when it comes right down to it, they're just people who went for it. You know, they're just normal, everyday people, but they went for it. And trying to instill that in more people that, look, don't settle for something that really not what you're passionate about. Like I said, you're getting me deep, but
I'm so glad you went there, because that brings up a couple of things that we've been talking about a lot lately. There are things that when you were a kid, you loved and you did without judgment. You did without any pressure. You just did it because you were a kid and you were playing and you were like creative and imaginative and anything was possible. And then as you grow up, you kind of get beat down and here are the things that you have to do and the things that you should be doing. And this is what you do next. And, you know, you kind of start losing that identity a little bit and you start doing the things that you feel you have to, or that you need to out of survival. Then all of a sudden, if you're lucky, you reach that point where you kind of start thinking about your identity again, if it's not been too lost or, you know, whatever you're going through as an individual, but you kind of circle back to that. True happiness to me is doing what I was doing when I was a little girl, mm-hmm. and being able to do that as an adult and as a mom and as a wife, and like really be creative and be open and less judgmental and less should and shaming myself, and more true to like how I feel and how fulfilled I feel. So when I was a little girl, I used to set up the video camera and I would record myself singing and dancing and playing piano and pretending I was a news broadcaster. And then all of a sudden that just like went out the window, and here I am 40 years old and I'm kind of like doing all of that again. And it feels so amazing. And now I aspire, just as you mentioned, like I want people to learn that earlier in life, so you don't spend a couple decades like going through the motions of trying to figure it all out, and really hold on to some aspect of that as you're learning and as you're progressing. And you can offer that to your guys. You can offer that to your kids. The other thing that when you said like, I want to teach them and take them under my wing. We had our nephews here a couple of weeks ago, and Greg and I are like, I should knock on wood, and I don't want to say it too loud, but like, we're going to be grandparents someday, and it's going to be like the most awesome thing ever, because you get to like kind of do it again with like how you raise your kids and share that excitement and that energy. And that's what life is all about. All of that energy and that internal love and excitement that we all have that kind of gets squandered. So like, I'm glad you went there. I'm glad you went deeper there and shared that, because I think that's so beautiful. That's what life's all about, is reaching that point where you can kind of come full circle with all of the things that you love and all of the things that you've learned, and then give it away.
Agree. I think you're right. I think we all know it. Somehow we know it in childhood. Like, we know what we want to do and want to be. We just lose it. And whether that's from, you know, experience or multiple people telling you, no, you can't do that, you need to get a real job. And yeah. I guess I rebelled against that, luckily earlier than most, and was like, you know what? I'm going to at least go for it. I may not make it, but I'm going to go for it, and then go for it in a big way.
And over the years, that has been a life progression. It's how you met your wife. If we can talk about Stacy for a minute here,
yeah,
you met Stacy at your same workplace. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah.
No, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've been married for
15 years. You put me out for a half a second. I thought I was going to be in trouble.
Sorry.
15 years. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, when you look back and connect the dots, like how everything works out. But yeah, yeah, she worked for the company for, I don't know how many, a couple of years. We were just acquaintances, and then reconnected later on, at a going away party for someone else we worked with. And the rest is history.
She's been along for the ride. And so she's been there as kind of like your support system and all of these transitions from different roles all the way to your role now. And some of that has required a lot of travel on your behalf. You have two teenage boys, Bryson and Colton. How old are they?
14, and Bryson will be 12 next week. So,
yeah, and they are heavily involved in sports, and you are such an active and engaged and involved dad. So, like, what does that look like to balance the requirements of your job and travel and the heaviness with being so active and engaged with your family and not letting one overpower the other?
It's tough. I mean, I can tell you, I make this joke every now and then, but I'll say it publicly because I say it to her all the time. She thinks I'm just saying it, but I won the lottery when I met Stacy. Like, I won the life lottery. She is an amazing partner in that she supports everything we do on a personal level and lets me do what I need to do professionally. And she's, I don't know what I'd do. And she'll laugh at this because I used to, when we first met and we were just acquaintances, I was going to do all this by myself. I was like, nope, not interested in getting married and not interested in, I wanted kids, but didn't know I was going to do it by myself, but not interested in getting married at all. And then, obviously that changed, and it's really because of the person that she is. And so she's amazing. She does it all. And I don't know how I would do it. I don't think I could do it without her, especially the family side. So yeah.
Yeah. Get you emotional.
Yeah. Don't get me emotional, but yeah, she's awesome.
I see it, you know, as your guys's friends, even from a distance. You know, we aren't the friends that are together every weekend. We're together once or twice a year. It's almost an ongoing joke for us, but when we're together and we go deep, and it's so much fun. And I see Stacy every day grinding in her own way. You know, there are so many moms who are stay-at-home moms. She is busier. I would not be able to keep up with that lady. Like, she has got it on lockdown. She pursues her own goals. She is very like you and taking control of her fitness and her wellness and understanding all that. She is super mom. She is running. She's got a calendar. Like, she's got it on lockdown. And so much, I admire Stacy in that way for so many reasons, and all the stay-at-home moms in that way for so many reasons who support their husbands in pursuing these big careers. You know, it's more than being a provider. It's like pursuing what you really love and being able to say, well, we're in this together. Like, we're a team. What you're doing, I'm doing. Even if I'm not there with you, even if it's not my role, you're doing it. That means I'm in it. So what do I need to do to be the other half of that? And you do that for her, obviously, too, and easy for us to see from the outside. But I'm so glad that we went there, and not to make you emotional, but like, I just think it's so important to discuss the importance of a supportive spouse in each and every one of these interviews that we do with people who are really doing big things and have heavy, heavy workloads and a lot of stress that could trickle into your everyday normal at home life and keeping it separate. And it is hard, but you do a great job of it.
She does. She's awesome. I can't take any credit for it. She keeps it straight. And like you said, on lockdown, and maintains her own independence and her own fitness. I almost think of her fitness journey as her career. Like, she's obviously a trainer, and she teaches classes, and she does all that while taking care of our kids and their crazy schedules and my crazy schedule. And so she's superwoman for sure.
Yeah. And for you to recognize that in her and saying that is really important, coming from another fitness woman. It's very important to me to not make that something that's narcissistic or to make it something that's negative and be supportive of that, because she's just trying to take care of her vessel, right? So that she can show up and be everything to everyone in the way that she needs to. And so from your perspective as the spouse, being supportive to her in that way is so important for her to feel that and to feel like she has permission to have that time for herself and not just be at everyone's beck and call, but like, I also have my independence and my identity that is supported by my spouse. So kudos to you for that. That's so important. I feel like that maybe is something that lacks, is this respect and appreciation for the stay-at-home mom or the mom who wants to pursue those things. And you do a great job of supporting and encouraging her.
Yeah. I don't think there's a tougher job in the world. Like I've made the joke to her and she'll laugh hearing this, but I think of myself as a good dad, but especially when the kids were young and she would, the first few times, like she was going out to do something and leaving the kids at home with me, I was home for like an hour and I was going, holy cow, how do you do this all the time? And I love them. They're awesome. But I've got a ton of respect for stay-at-home moms. They definitely, they don't get the respect they deserve.
You probably see that a lot in your athletes, because your athletes travel and their schedule is so demanding in that way when they're in season, and yeah. Many of them are married and have families. As a culture, do you guys have conversations around that kind of stuff?
We don't have conversations around it, but I can tell you, like, all of our athletes who are married, their wives run the business. Like they run the brand of, you know, whoever that athlete is. And then again, that, talk about job, that's travel schedules every week. And then at some point when they have kids, a lot of them are bringing their kids with them on these, you know, flying into Anaheim for Angel Stadium, Arlington, AT&T Stadium. So it is a full-time job and they're truly managing, you know, their careers, their family's careers, their husband's careers.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's common that the wives are really running the world in our sport, for sure.
Yeah. So the importance of a supportive spouse, but also the importance of choosing the right partner to do life with.
Definitely.
And, yeah.
The number one, I would say that's the number one. That's your most important decision that anyone's ever going to make.
I would agree. I feel like we're all very fortunate. We are all, the three of us, and if Stacy was here, the four of us, I feel like we all hit the jackpot. So
you definitely did, because that Greg guy's pretty special. But
I know.
Nah, you both did.
You two get a room, you know, enough. what you've shared with us today about your own personal journey is so insightful and so inspiring and so real. And it shows the other side of Dave. Dave, the businessman, shows up and he's ready all the time. This gives people just a small glimpse of what we get as Dave, the friend, and Dave, the dad, and Dave, the human, who is just an absolute asset to the world. So I hope that you continue to feel confident in sharing what you've learned over the years with people in just the game of life, because you inspire us every day. Your encouragement to us it means so much more than you probably could ever imagine. And so we are very grateful that you decided to join us on an episode.
Awesome. Thank you. And you guys inspire me. I've told you both, but probably not enough. Like, just the little quick post or text or whatever. It means a lot. And you guys are awesome. Love you both.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks,
we love you guys. We've met our quota for the year of getting together and hanging out, but you know, we could always put another one on the calendar and like really go for it this year.
Yeah.
If you guys want.
Yeah.
To
let's push it. Let's push it.
What's next, and where can we find more information about you and Supercross, and you know, what's happening with this merging of the two different entities?
The unification. Yeah. So you can go to supermotocross.com to check out what's going on there with the two sports coming together, Supercross, AMA Supercross, and AMA Pro Motocross. And as far as I go, you can see me here, or I'm a very rare poster on Instagram at Dave Prater. But yeah, that's about it.
I'll link it in the show notes. And Dave Prater's Instagram is full of Supercross and motocross, but hopefully we'll get to see a sprinkle more of Dave Prater.
It's all about people. It's a testament that people love pictures of dirt. That's
which is music.
Let me say this. This is crazy. So years ago, we went to an event up in Tampa. You guys invited us to it, and it was amazing walking around on the dirt track before the event. And this blew my mind. So it'll probably blow other people's mind too, if you don't know this already, but you guys bring all the dirt from location to location. That's crazy.
No, we don't, but we have.
Oh, you don't?
But we store it on location. So like in Tampa, Raymond James Stadium. So there's a lot of grass field parking lots, which Florida has in general. We store. So we actually store our dirt in the parking lot, or Angel Stadium in Anaheim. We elevated the employee parking 4 feet, and then we put asphalt over it. And every January, every right after Christmas, because that's our opening round every year, we go in, we peel the asphalt off, bring all the dirt from the parking lot inside the stadium, build the racetrack, and then when we're finished, take it back out, put it down, and asphalt back over it for the Angel staff to park on the rest of the year. So we dirt's our most expensive line item, especially trucking of dirt. So whenever we can, we try to store it right there on site. So if you're at, you know, a baseball or football game at a major stadium in the U.S., look around. You'll probably somewhere find a pile of dirt that Supercross uses a race on when we're there.
Who comes up with that? Who comes up with, let's put this dirt over here and then put asphalt over top of it for the year, and then we'll pull it out when we need it and put it back? Whose idea is that?
It was, again, it's the team. Like our original plan for Angel Stadium was to create a big soccer field. So it was in the corner right over. If you're familiar with the stadium, there's a big A in the parking lot with a LED board on it, right by the 57, I think it is. But anyway, we were going to elevate that area and turf it and put a soccer field, like a park for kids to play. The problem was the Angels didn't have enough parking if we did that for their staff for baseball games. So it went from a park to a parking lot. But yeah, it's one of those things that the evolution of spending a lot of money on trucking every year and, or, you know, running into problems with, you know, trying to find storage, because it's 500 dump truck loads of dirt that you have to find storage for. It takes up quite a bit of room. So you just build it into the stadium deals.
See, all of these things that no one would ever think happens that are behind the scenes of things like that are fascinating to me. Just problem, solution, one of those small day-to-day, no big deal things you have to deal with in your role with your team. It's pretty amazing to think about. It's
pretty
mind-blowing.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it leads to dad things. Like when we went to see FSU Oklahoma in the Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando, this past January, I think it was, or December, and we're walking by the Supercross dirt at Camping World Stadium, and I'm like, hey kids, there's our
dirt. It's looking sharp.
That dirt's looking sharp.
That's great. Well, thank you again so very much. We really appreciate this. It's been fun, at least for us. Guys,
appreciate it.
Hey yo. Congratulations on investing into yourself and your growth. I hope you found this episode to be beneficial and feel proud of yourself for showing up. If you found this episode helpful, please consider sharing with someone else who may benefit from it too. I'd love to hear from you, so hit me up on all socials at Cameo Elise Braun. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow for new episodes and updates. Also, it's super important to mention, this is intended for entertainment and education through experience. None of it is fully known to be fact and is not a replacement for professional advice from a therapist or doctor. Thank you so much for being here with me, and be sure to thank yourself for showing up.